Blog Talk Radio.
With Miss E. I'm excited about all of our calls, but this one has a very special place in my heart. And I woke up this morning before the alarm went off, and I was just thinking, oh, tonight is Wednesday night. And I think I'm starting to feel like a little kid in that whole process. But as you know, and if you've listened before, and if you haven't, Heart Talk with Miss E is a program that airs twice a month on second and fourth Wednesdays, where we address issues related to current, former, and transitioning foster youth and those who care about them. And we've had the opportunity to have had some awesome guests on with some very good topic matters. And I want to say a special shout out to my new Facebook family, also known as the Little Rascals. And I'm known for adopting people, but they have adopted me, and they don't know how much joy and pleasure they've brought into my life over the past several weeks. And actually, our guest from the previous 2 weeks, was Mr. Stuart Mills, and he is one of the Little Rascals. And I just want to say shout out to Stuart, Tom, Nikki, Lisa, Lucy, everybody there. I appreciate you so much. Tonight, we have two young men that I'm very proud of. One who has a very special place in my heart and has for quite some time, and you probably, if you've been around me at any point, you've heard me speak of him. If you've read my book, you've seen him in my book, and hopefully soon you'll be reading his book. And he is none other than Mr. Kevin Brown. And Kevin was first and foremost, our very first recipient of the Les Brown Heart of Dreams and Tenacity Award. He is a graduate of Clark Atlanta University with a double major in business and fashion design. And he's going to share with you part of his story. And hopefully, as he continues, you will be led to perhaps even do some pre-purchases of his book. Kevin, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for being here. It wouldn't be right without you. And our second guest is a gentleman who I actually met approximately 3 years ago through the Writers Resource Center when I was still working on my book. And he came in with all this energy, and I could just tell he was good people. And we exchanged information, and then he looked at me and said, oh, I was a foster kid. I said, seriously? He said, yes. And he has about finished with his book. And I've actually learned more about him in the past month than I have over the past 3 years, because he was one of our speakers at our Foster Pride event a few weeks ago in recognition of National Foster Care Month. And Dion is a former foster youth, and I turned stand-up comedian, and you will probably hear some of that come out in his talk. But Dion has managed to integrate the pains of some of the losses and changes in growing up in foster care and the humor, and he's dedicated his whole life now to the field of youth and child development, and he is also the founder of Price Edutainment, which he will hopefully have time to share something about. So he was in commute from his work with youth, and we were going to wait till he got inside, so I'm going to make sure he is at a place where he is in a soundproof room. Are you there, Dion?
Yes, I am. Happy Wednesday, everyone.
Happy Wednesday to you, too. Very good. So, in recognition of Father's Day, I wanted to do something that, you know, sort of worked around that this season, to talk about topics and issues as they come up and impact our young people. And so I had thought about, you know, just doing something on, you know, father figures, or, you know, foster fathers, or role models, or any way, relationships that you had. But it turns out, when I even put the notice out, the responses that I got were from two young men, both who did not have their fathers in their lives. And I was saying, well, maybe God is trying to tell me something. Maybe this is what we really need to focus on. And even though I knew the story and was actually around for part of Kevin's story, I just happened to read his blog. Was it last week or a couple of weeks ago? And it was so right on, I said, you know what? You need to be on this program. And so even though I didn't have to say he needed to, but he volunteered, and I'm so grateful. And the stories actually somewhat coincide. So we are going to allow both young men to share part of their stories about what it was like growing up, first and foremost, in the foster care system, secondly, to grow up without that biological father and the impact, and what happened from there on out. And I can't tell the story, so I will let them tell it. So, Kevin, Dion, introduce yourselves and let's just go, like we normally talk on the telephone.
All right, okay, well, Dion, you go first.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, so thank you, Ms. E, for first of all doing this program. It is so necessary to reach out and to spread the word on fatherhood and the importance and the impact it can have on not only a family and a youth, but a community. And I am a product of both the foster care system and the lack of a father due to substance abuse and just absentee of a person not being present. And so that really propelled me into eventually being the father that I am, and the what I call like to call a youth advocate, to make sure that I do my part to impart on positive things to improve the quality of life for as many young people, particularly young men, and starting with my own young men, and do what I can to spread that information to indirectly affect the community as a whole by being a mentor and a father figure or a big brother or what have you for those individuals who may not have that biological father. I didn't meet my father until I was 9 years old, and it was kind of strange because my mom, who I'll be able to share this information in the piece that I'm writing, was an alcoholic, and I actually met my dad when I was 9. She was having what used to be called a drinking party, and she says, "You see that guy over there? It was a little social group," and I said, "Yeah." She said, "That's your daddy," and and that's unfortunately how I met this gentleman.
And wow.
It was unfortunate. See, that's your daddy. That dude sitting over there. And from then, I had no relationship with him, but I ended up living with him for about 9 months when I was 9, and I hadn't seen him again since that period until very recently, about 30-plus years later. And that's
wow.
In a nutshell what I have, and everything in between will come out. But that's my situation as far as my relationship with my father.
Wow. Had there been any discussion about your father prior to her pointing him out at the drinking party?
Well, absolutely not. Well, just teasing. Like, I would walk by a bum and somebody would say, "Hey, that's your daddy." And you know how kids were. We would tease each other that way. And then I was like, no, we're just teasing. My older brothers and sisters, several of them had relationships with their fathers, but I didn't. So there was no specific information as to this person is your dad and he lived here until that day, other than jokes and being teased about who your father might be.
Wow. Do you recall what it felt like at that time?
It was very uncomfortable because it's here's a guy that I'd never met, and she sits me down on his lap in front of this guy, and I was uncomfortable anyway because he was a mechanic or something. I didn't notice till later. but he had a jumpsuit on. I remember this very vividly, and it kind of scared me because he was kind of raggedy looking. I guess he was a mechanic, and he was had oil all in his hands, and it scared me because, and I'd never seen it before, but the inside of his hands was darker than the outside. I had never seen anything like that. I said, "What's wrong with this dude?" And I was standing, I was kind of sheltered, right? And she sits me right in front of this guy, and his scent—he was muscle came from work, but I noticed that he had cologne on, but he was dressed kind of scruffily, like he just got off work. And I'm like, "Who in their right mind would spray cologne over funk or must?" And that's what I smelled. And that was unfortunately my first encounter. And then she sits me down and looks him right in the face with me sitting there saying, "Hey, you want to go live with him?" Just like that.
Wow.
I don't even know this dude. And I was at nine. I didn't know how to say, well, I just met this dude. I don't know anything about him. So me being a shy guy, I'm like, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It was a weird situation.
So this was prior to your even entering the foster care system.
Yes, I had been in and out. I went again after that, but this was before. It was after, but I went again a second time.
Okay.
So
okay.
So this was in between. Yes, it was in between.
Okay. Okay. You sort of set the foundation. So let's switch over to Kevin. And I still hear a little background noise in your. I think it might be even in your phone. But I'm going to switch over and let Kevin share the base of his story, and then we can go ahead with some of the questions and comments from even our listeners. I see our chat room is filling up. Welcome, everybody. Kevin, share with us your story.
My share with you. Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Yes, I didn't catch you. What you said, share with you.
So share with us your story about finding out about your dad and what it was like before.
Finding out about my father, or you want me to finding out that I didn't have a father?
Finding out that you didn't have a father, and then from there, yeah.
I would have to say the first part of my life was more so of a whirlwind.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, the only person that I knew was pretty much just my sister and I. You know, mm-hmm. We had seen our biological mother before, but an actual father never really occurred to me as long as I had my sister. So there was, mm-hmm. I didn't care about anybody else's existence because she was the only person that I knew. So it was more so just a bond between us.
Were an infant when you entered foster care, so it was just the two of you then.
Yeah, and she, pretty much the bond that somebody usually, that a child usually develops with their mother, I developed with my
mm-hmm.
sister.
Okay.
So I was kind of oblivious to having a father until I moved to Vallejo with Miss Mary Jackson. She had came and got my sister and I from a shelter in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And when we moved to Vallejo, I had foster cousins who actually had a father. And that's about the earliest that I think I can remember of actually seeing somebody have a dad. And then just seeing, you know, the way that he interacted with them and the resemblance that they shared. And, you know, so from there I was kind of, you know, I thought it was cool to have somebody, you know, an older male around. So, you know, I would try to hang around him. And when I was probably around 9 years old, my biological mother came to visit my sister and I, and she brought my sister's father. And she brought my sister's father, and at first he was just a guy. I didn't know who he was. Me and my sister shared similar names, so I thought that we were full blood. You know, we had the exact same parents. And then she says that this is Kiana's dad. And then that kind of left me thinking, wow, well, where's mine?
Mm-hmm. What about me?
Yeah, what about me? And so that was kind of like the first impact of, wow, you don't have a dad. And then, you know, me and my sister, we were I guess you could say rivals, or, you know, just kids being kids. And so she would tease me, like, I have a dad, you don't have a dad, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
So, you know, went on into that. And so it was just more so, for me, the feeling of I don't have parents. And, you know, the whole dad situation kind of put a rift between my sister and I, because I no longer felt that we were 100% at that time.
Mm.
So that had an impact on my feeling towards her at the young age of 9.
Wow. So not only did you come to the place of not having the person that was, you know, a potential presence in your life, you know, just that knowing that your people was somewhere, then it took away what you knew with her. It took away that bonding. So that was like everything that you had.
Yeah, like that's all I. She's all I had. All I ever knew.
Mm-hmm.
She's the only person in the world. That's it.
What's the age difference between you and your sister?
4 years. But she
okay.
She raised me. Like I used to sleep with my sister in the same bed as my sister. You know, for most that I know, you know, she potty trained me. She would make sure that I ate. She would take care of me as if she was my parent. Like, I wouldn't go anywhere without my sister. Like, one time we were separated, and I cried every single day until every moment that I was awake until they put us back together.
Wow. Wow. So that was special. So fast forward ahead. I find it interesting that 9 years of age was the age of both for you and Dion that you came to the knowledge of something different in your life about this father. So I think 9 years of age is a significant age, and we're going to come back to that. So fast forward.
Hello?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? I said fast forward to the part about you finding out about your biological dad.
Oh, I went to study abroad in London my fourth year in college, and I came back. There was kind of some feud with my biological family. And so what I found out was that my name is Kevin Brown, but apparently or supposedly – the guy who's my actual father's name is not Kevin Brown. And so I found this out by, you know, anger between two relatives, some type of family secrets or something like that. And I was a bit skeptical. And so I called some of my biological aunts. I don't really reach out to my biological family that much. So I called one of my biological aunts, asked her. She said only your mother could tell you about that, about the situation. And so I called my biological mother, who tried to dance around the question, and we finally got to the bottom of it, and it was true that my dad had a different name, and it was actually a different person, and she had basically been lying to me, you know, this entire time, telling me that Kevin Brown was deceased, and, you know, basically to close the story on the whole name situation, because I, when I was younger, I thought about, you know, reaching out to him. Or whatnot. She told me that he was deceased. So after finding that information out, I was just pretty much like, it doesn't really matter. I'm grown already. I made it this far without this guy. It doesn't really matter. And then I found out he was dead. So really didn't matter. But so I just let that situation go. And in my fifth year of college, the following year, I actually got a little curious. And one thing that had always been a burning desire for me in my life was to see somebody who looked like me. Because, you know, I was really, really close with my sister, but we don't, to me, we don't look alike. And the same thing for the rest of my siblings and for my biological mother, we don't look alike. So I've always felt like the odd man out, in addition to being an odd man out in foster care, because I've never seen anyone who looked like me.
Mm.
And I reach out to... I have a brother in San Francisco. My dad had another son. I have a brother in San Francisco who stays in the same housing project as my sister's dad, my older sister's dad. And so I reached out to her dad to ask him to find my brother so that I could try to get in contact with my dad's family. So I basically called him every day, called my sister's dad every day for at least 2 or 3 weeks, and I finally get a hold of it to try to get him to get a hold of my brother, gets a hold of my brother, who and then calls his grandmother, who calls our grandmother. And our grandmother was away in Arkansas, so I left a message on her voicemail. She called me back about a week later and said, I understand that you might be Jimmy's son. I said, yeah, this is what I hear, but I'm not sure. I'm thinking, who wouldn't want a college graduate to be a part of their family, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I'm just a little bit skeptical. And, you know, she, I guess, passed my information on to her children, who then called me. And they called me, and we talked, and I emailed some pictures over, and they said that I looked exactly like their brother. And, I mean, at this point, I'm still a bit skeptical. They, and then the first picture that I see of him is a is his obituary. He actually died in 1993. So he actually died when I was 9 years old, which is funny. So I saw his obituary, and I still didn't think that we looked alike. And I saw a couple other pictures. Our smile was a little bit similar, but to me that wasn't enough. And
did you want it to be? Because you're saying it wasn't enough, but do you think it was that you didn't want to buy into it and be let down, or did you just, you know, not want it to be?
Probably a bit of both. I mean, you know, when you, I feel like when you grow up in foster care, you have a strong sense of independence.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it was or not, I was still going to have to stand on my own too, regardless, especially being that he was deceased. It's not like I was able to meet him. But, you know, you definitely don't want to be let down, because this is seeming like it's off of a Lifetime movie or something like that. You know, where I'm making a phone call, talking to them, you know, and then they're like, yeah, you're a part of our family. I'm like the long-lost relative. So it's kind of like you don't want to be that guy who basically sold yourself a dream thinking that you were a part of this family and then come to find out you really weren't. I mean, you make some great friends, but, you know, it's not what you were looking for.
Right. So,
And it turned out that they flew me out to Portland with my other two. I had two cousins who were also graduating from college, same year, double degree, so I guess it runs in the family. And on my last day, they treated me like family. They treated me really nicely. And on my last day, I saw a picture of this man, of James Hopkins, that looked exactly like me. And that was probably that was one of the best days of my life.
Wow.
Exactly. He's somebody who looked like me. It took all of 23 years and 5 months and such and such days, but it definitely, that mattered.
Yeah.
It mattered a whole lot.
And, you know, I remember portions of when, you know, that was all going on and you just sort of downplayed it all, you know, as you were going and some of it. And you're not one to really disclose a whole lot initially anyway. So, but just I remember when that picture came out, and for people who want to go to your blog, there's a picture of you next to his in your blog now. But the one that you had out way back in, what was that, MySpace days, it was almost like twins. It was like, whoa, it got me. So that was that thing of appearance. And your blog is really about the name. And we're going to come back because I know that, you know, just even carrying the name and that being a representation of your character as well as other aspects of life that was important to you. Let's go back and bring Dion back in. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Did you get to hear Kevin's?
Yeah, fascinating story. Still there?
You haven't gotten situated yet, huh?
I don't know what that noise is. And
okay.
I don't know what it is. Maybe just my
Are you
cell
on
phone.
A speaker phone? Are you on a speaker?
Let me try that. I'm on speaker. Let me be able to put it up to my ears, see if that's different.
Okay, that might help.
All right, I'm here.
Okay,
I
hear.
Offline. Is
okay,
that
that's yeah, that's better. I still hear something, but that's better.
Okay. Yeah, I hear it too, but I don't think it's on my end. It's like a interference or something.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll keep going.
Uh-huh.
We will not allow interferences to cause a disruption.
Right. Let's keep it moving. Keep it moving.
It's called resilience. Okay.
Yes,
so I thought it was interesting that you and Kevin both were 9 years old when these new, revelations came to you, were presented before you. So was
yes,
there anything
ma'am.
About Kevin's story that you could relate to?
Just being the odd man out, I listen closely and I can feel that, I guess, pain may be a too large of a word, but feeling disconnected from your family, even
mm-hmm.
similar to the foster care, you're never really emotionally bonded to that family because, you know, at any given moment, there could be a separation. That's how I felt when I was going out of the foster care system. And even with my own family, with the instability, I never had the same last name as any of my other siblings.
Okay.
And that made me feel different because why am I different? And everyone else have, you know, a different last name. And it made me feel a little. So I connected with that when he said he never felt connected because he never looked like anyone. And I just felt that I was, you know, I was kind of on the side here where everybody else connected to this family name and this bond.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, when I was given connection with my dad, when I first met this person, and it didn't give me any more warm bonding with him because when he first took me to his home, that when my mother allowed me to live with him for 9 months initially, he brought me home to a woman's house, and it was 12 o'clock at night. He was a mechanic, so we stopped at one of his shops, and I was excited because I never used to be going anywhere. And inside, it was the first time I ever sat in the front seat of a car, and that was one thing that I always remembered, and I was 9 years old then, so... So we show up to his shop, and after he hung out with some friends for a while, then he takes me to a nicer little neighborhood in the Inglewood area of Los Angeles. And it was late then, so he set me up on the sofa, and he meets this woman, and I go in. I didn't know who the woman was. I assumed it was his wife. But I hear them in the room, right next to behind the sofa in another room, and I hear him tell this woman, when she asks him, who is that son? His name was Larry. Who is that boy, Larry? And he tells her, oh, I found him on the street. He told this woman that he found me on the street. And I'm like, what? He said, this man sit here begs my mother to give him 9 years after I haven't seen him in my life. And he takes me to this woman's house and tells her that he found me in the street like I was a stray homeless boy.
Mm.
Now, I got up at that point. Remember, it was 12 o'clock at night. And I was so disturbed by that, I get up and I walk to the door and say, you know what, I'm out of here. I got to the door, then it hit me, and I'm trying to get, I'm like, I'm done, I'm out of here. And I realized, I don't know where in the heck I am. If I went out this door, I wouldn't know how to get home. I didn't know where the heck I was. So I sat my little mad behind down and just sucked it up and cried with myself to sleep. Cause I felt really uncomfortable. And I will never forget that feeling of this man telling him someone. I'm like, wow, I'm not even enough for you to say. And then years later, I write this in a separate chapter in the book Raised in Hell of why I realized 30 years later why he did that. I just found this out months ago why he did that. And that was so uncomfortable. So I could really connect
with
this.
Share with us how you reconnected, because I found out that you had actually reconnected with him. Well, to be honest, not until now did I realize that you had actually met him at 9 years of age. I thought this was your first time seeing him. But you had shared that either in a blog or on Facebook about your meeting him.
Mm-hmm.
Will you share some of that with our listening audience?
Yes, ma'am. It was my sister who I met that day when I went over to his family's house, and I met her. Her name is Pamela Price, and I was connected with her. My the father that we share, apparently he had another child named Pam, and I had met her that first time. So her and I was being connected throughout high school.
Mm.
And then years later, we both went to Dorsey High School in Los Angeles, and I hadn't contacted her or heard from her in years,
and she put out a blog on Facebook that I am looking for Deion Price, anyone. And she saw my name, and she came across one of my columns and the things I have online, and she got a hold of me through Facebook. And it was a great to hear from. After 20-some years, I hear from her, and then she says she reconnected me with our father, who's now living in Louisiana. And she put us on three-way and just said, hey, Dad, do you know who this is? And how would he know from a nine-year-old? I don't sound the same as I did when I was nine. But that was a warm reunion, and his response was he was looking for me, which I don't really buy. But the reality of it is he had another family. He was married at the time, so my mother was a mistress, and so was my sister Pam's. He was never married to either of our mothers.
Mm.
So this man had two families. That's why he took me there and told this woman, Pam's mom, that he found me, because he was basically, you know, living, you know, rolling and having these illegitimate kids. So that's why I was supposed to be a secret on both sides, because he was married to the same woman for 45 plus years, all this time.
While he had
a child with my mom and had a child with Miss Pam's mom. So that's why I was a secret. So I found that out later.
As I shared with you during an earlier conversation, there is a gentleman I met in Atlanta, and he wrote a book entitled, his name is Suave Walker, and he wrote a book entitled Lust Child, you know, as opposed to Love Child. And we were talking about that we would be doing this program tonight and the impact that those moments, you know, when that relationship isn't really based on love, the impact that it has on the life that it produces. And I wholeheartedly believe, you know, for one, that everybody that is here, God still had a purpose for your life, regardless of how you got here. And that's the number one thing I want to say to any of our young people and our listeners, that if you're here and your parents had issues, that's not your problem, because you came here with a purpose. And I think of Khalil Gibran has a quote that says, our children don't belong to us. They come through us but not from us. And I had the opportunity to interview Ayanna Vincent, and her statement was, our parents, you know, and our mothers are the vessels. You know, they were just the vehicle to get us here. And if they don't do anything else from there, their job is done, because now we're released into the universe to fulfill our destiny. And I believe that so heartily. And that's one message I want all young people to get, despite, you know, what the issues are between our parents, whether it's infidelity, whether it's whatever the situation is, that does not define who you are. So I just wanted to throw that in there, because as you're telling the story and it unfolds, we usually hear it from the other side, but we don't get to hear from the perspective of the young person that was born out of that. So when you met him, how were you feeling? I mean, because you still have these memories of a nine-year-old. How were you feeling about talking to him?
Well, when you get my age, you go through the things that you do. You're at peace with it. And like you, I realize that all the trials and tribulations you go through, it has directly or indirectly cultivated or developed who you are as a person. I don't think I may be the same person without going through those challenges. And they made me a more resilient individual, made me a more loving parent. So I'm grateful for being able to survive that. So I had no ill will, ill feelings, or bitterness whatsoever. I was at peace with it a long time ago. This is a 75-year-old man. So I had no bitterness or whatever. But I just wanted to share with him that, hey, be able to tell my children that you do have a grandfather. You know, and here he is. And I never had a grandmother, so my grandmother passed away before I was born. But to help my children say, hey, there is a grandfather. And that's a missing link that has been missing in my immediate family history in respect to my own children. So that was one thing. I was more excited for them than for me. You guys have a grandfather. Because their mom's side, their grandfather passed away. You know, so that was it for me. But speaking to him, I was just more connected with how you've been, how's your health, and those type of things, and just learning a little bit more about my history and he was able to share with me, you know, that I have a brother, another brother, and these things. So that was okay. There was no bitterness or whatsoever. So I contact him once a month, and I think there'll be a healthy relationship.
So the difference between you and Kevin is that you went through your lives without them. As adults, you were able to at least resolve the question about their identity. You didn't get – Kevin did not have the opportunity to sit down and ask questions, but at least it resolved something for each of you that was important. And I believe that every person has something that they want or looking for in having that paternal or even maternal connection. But I want to know from each of you, what was it that you wanted most or that you felt that you missed most by not having your fathers in your lives? And that's for both of you.
Okay, go ahead, Kev. Go ahead and take that one, brother.
I would say by not having my father there, just that role model, that constant role model, you know, who was actually yours. You know, like a sense of ownership of a man, you know, who looks just like you. That was always a big thing for me. Just having them there, you know, maybe to come check out some of that sports that I did or some of the leadership things or just, you know, some of the stuff, somebody to model myself after that I looked up times. You know, I found role models in other men, but, you know, I always wanted that person right there, you know, who would teach me the ropes, who would teach me what I should do and what I shouldn't do, you know, when dealing with others, what I should do and what I shouldn't do with dealing with girls or, you know, getting ready to go to college or getting ready to before an athletic, you know, competition or something like that. That's what I felt that I missed.
And I know that you were able to find some of that in mentors and one in particular. But you said something I think that was the real key to how that might have been limited. And so, and I'm just speaking about your relationship with your mentor that I know. You want to talk about that mentoring relationship?
Oh, yeah. Fillmore Graham?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Fillmore Graham is probably one of the greatest human beings to walk this earth, to be honest. I met Mr. Graham. He founded the Boys and Girls Club, Continents of Omega Boys and Girls Club in 1966 in Vallejo. And I started to attend the Boys and Girls Club like in 1991, and I was basically on the verge of being kicked out of the Boys and Girls Club because I was just really, really, really bad. And actually, again, I was around nine when I was about to get kicked out of the Boys and Girls Club too. And Graham brought me to his office because all of the staff members just said that I was too bad, just didn't want to listen. They've had enough of me, and he took me to his office, and he challenged me with a question. I'll never forget this question. He asked me, what weighs more, a pound of bricks or a pound of feathers? And my first answer was a pound of bricks. And he said, how could a pound of bricks weigh more than a pound of feathers if they're both a pound? And so that started our relationship because he would reward me for getting things correct. So every time I saw him, I would always come looking for him so that I could win something by being smart.
So he also challenged you.
Yeah, he challenged me mentally. And, you know, with that, I mean, my behavior was still a bit mischievous, but, you know, he had me hooked. So I would look for him every single day. And if he ever asked me to do anything or anything like that, like there was just a level of loyalty established through our relationship. And, you know, he was just more so nurturing and just looked out for him. He actually cared. And, again, you know, you just wanted to see that role model. And, you know, it does something for you when you're a young boy and you see a man, you know, and you can actually run up to him, maybe grab on his arm, hang on his arm, just, you know, be by him, a little bit of attention. You know, that mattered for me.
Yes, yes. Dion, what was it that you missed most about having or that you wanted for, hoped for most in having to have a father in your life?
Well, money. resources, financial resources. That was the main thing.
Provision.
That was it. Right, you know, really, because fortunately, I had older siblings and I had older brothers that really filled the void into my that nurturing parenting father figure.
And okay.
I give them Father's Day gifts, and to this day, one of the most respected men I know, and I learned this from my older brother Herman, the most respected man. I realized that it is about who you are individually. This was the most respected young man, and he's about as big as about 5 foot with heels. He's a short guy, he thinks he's taller than he is, but he's only about 5'2", right? But I learned that he had so much respect around everyone, respected this man so much. And the way he carried himself, the way he treated other people, he always commanded respect to be so small, but command so much respect. And that was a great lesson in manhood and who you are as far as your integrity. And one thing that this man did that I love and I owe him a lot, but when we were going in and out of those foster homes, he did everything in his power. He was only 19 when we were really going into it. And I saw him sit in a police station. He was a hardcore guy at one point when he was going through his late teens. But when we first went through a family traumatic incident that led in me and my at five and my older brother at eight in a police station, the only thing we could do is he tried to find someone to take us. He was not old enough to take two young boys. So he called every family member we knew that to try to take us in before these people would take us away into the L.A. foster care system. We had a very poor reputation at the time. And for the first time in my life, I saw a grown man cry. And this man went into tears. When he hung that phone up and it hit the hook at that time, after several attempts, I saw tears roll up in his eyes, and I knew we were in trouble because there was no one. He almost begged one of my aunts to take us, and they wouldn't. And there was nothing he could do. He was powerless. And he saw us being almost literally, well, for me, it was literally dragged away in tears because I didn't know where these people were taking us. So they, as they dragged me away, and there's nothing he can do because he's only 19 and he was on his way to the Army, he couldn't do anything. To see his own flesh and blood dragged away like that into a questionable future. And I saw the hurt in his eyes, and that really affected me deeply. From that point on, he committed his entire life to maintaining his stability so that he can be the father figure and the stable one in our life. Even when we were going in and out of these foster homes, it was him to make sure we weren't split up. He kept visiting. He made sure that he would try to find someone to keep both of us or all of us at that time. Mm-hmm. And he eventually found a grand aunt of someone to take all four of us. So he really sacrificed his own young adulthood to make sure that he kept his younger siblings together. And I will always appreciate and respect him for that, for being that rock in our life.
Program that we're going to have to topic to address is siblings.
Absolutely.
There's many of those siblings, separated siblings, a lot, but the siblings taking care of siblings, which is, Kevin
Absolutely.
Spoke of, even though there was only 4 years difference between he and his biological sister, mm-hmm. that she was his nurturer, his provider, his parent figure.
And
talking to those older children also who took on the responsibility, and I know that still continues even today. So that is something else. So remind me that we were going to address that topic as well.
And that's just so appreciated because you have to take up the slack, and I have to give it up for those. And I'm that same way with my nieces and nephews. But as far as that nurturing, it was there. But the missing part from the father was those things like getting a person a bike, those little things like that, tangible, maybe meaningless, materialistically, but they mean a lot to a child. Just to say my father purchased me this and have the things that other kids need. I always tease people and they think I'm joking about this, but my mom, being the condition she was, I never had a whole present. It was always half. She would give me the handlebars. I had to hustle for some seats, and I'd have to steal a tire. I didn't have a whole bike till I was 19 years old. And eventually, everybody was driving. And you know, this in my conversation with my dad when I first connected with him recently, you know what he said? He said, he actually bought a bike for me, and put it on a porch to at an address where he thought we lived. And I said, are you kidding me? Do you know what you did was just a gift for somebody in the ghetto that we lived in? Why did you put a bike on a porch? I said, I never saw that bike. It was a gift for the community. You might as well just throw the bike in the middle of the street. It was funny. Those little things like that, the nurturing, the people buying you things and taking you to Disneyland, and those little things that a father would do with a child is what I miss.
Okay. All right. Now, and our time is going by so quickly, but I'm learning. I set our radio time, even though the show is supposed to be an hour, I've set it so that it will record a little longer so we don't get cut off when we are not able to wrap up in time. And we've got people just cracking up in the chat room. And there are lots of comments and questions there that I want to get to. We also have several callers on the line, and a couple have their hands up to want to speak something. But two questions I want to ask you before we go to our callers, because this is a real issue for me. One, I wanted to know if any of the foster homes you were in had fathers, if you had foster fathers. The second question that you can answer in the same, you know, breath is, do you think single moms should be foster parents to boys? And the reason I'm asking this, because some of you may know that I'm an adoptive parent. I was a foster parent of two boys, which my book is pretty much about that experience. But it really hurt me when a friend's husband said, she don't have any business trying to be raising no boys, you know. And my response to him was like, how many have you raised? You know, So, but and then I think when they started to make bad choices, there's that little voice that keeps coming up in the back of my head that you shouldn't have had them. And then, you know, that you shouldn't do. And so, but I continuously fight that. But I'm just wondering from your perspective, were there male figures in your foster homes? How did you deal with them? And do you think that single moms should be foster parents?
Go ahead, Dee.
All right. Well, I will real quick. All the foster parents, the houses that I lived in, there were men there, but they had no presence whatsoever. They were almost invisible. And I don't understand that, and I still see that very often today with the people that I'm close with that happen to be foster parents. The men are absent. With the foster care that I lived in, my most vivid foster parent name was Miss H, and there was middle age. This gentleman, I almost never heard him speak. So he was there, but he was really not present, had no impact whatsoever. And
wow.
As far as females raising men, I believe that a loving parent is better than no parent at all, whether it's a woman, child, uncle, sister, whoever. If a child needs a parent for whatever reason, and a loving woman or single or anyone is willing to give that child the parenting, nurturing, love that they need, who cares? That's better than nothing. Now, ideally, you would want a male present to help guide them, because there are some things that a female may have a challenge persuading a young man to develop into as far as manhood. That's just the nature of it. But that doesn't mean that it can't be done. Doesn't mean it can't be done at all.
Village. That's
yes,
where the village comes in.
Absolutely.
Kev.
Yeah. I'd say this. Absolutely a woman could raise a male. I mean, it's been going on, you know, since the times of slavery, you know, all the way back when, you know, where the males were being sacrificed, basically, or being executed. Yes, you could raise a woman could raise a male. The other thing I would say is that at a certain point, he's probably going to need a role model to show him things that the mother can't.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that there was one particular foster home that I stayed in where there was a male there, and I was from the age of 12 to 17 for about 5 years. It was actually the worst situation that I've ever been in.
Mm.
That was like 5 years of just being under attack, under siege. But I will say this, that he was definitely on me. He was on top of me to make sure that I didn't fall by the wayside. Mm-hmm. Now, he had his own methods about going about it, but had it not been for him for that time period, almost certainly I would probably be in the Country Club Crest, if not dead or locked up right now, if it wasn't for him. He really, 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 like, he was all over me. And
wow.
I mean, of course, but yeah, like his in-home presence, it mattered, and it mattered in the shape of, number one, you know, as a younger male, you really don't want any slack from a bigger male, you know, because even though it's not supposed to necessarily happen or anything like that, you know, you don't want any type of physical activity going on. So you kind of, you know, you mess up here and there, of course you will, but you kind of try and stay on a straight and narrow for the most part. You know, and like I said, he had some things about, some ways about him that probably weren't the best, but I remember one time telling him, you know, I want to be like you, and he said, don't be like me, be better than me.
Right. Okay.
You know, and so, you know, that spoke to a matter of character.
Right,
you know?
Right. So would you say, because I have issues, you know, when people hurt, it just reminds me of the comment that Tyler Perry says his biological father said to him, you know, because his father was physically and emotionally abusive. However, you know, I hear parents often say, well, when you get grown, you'll thank me for it. And I see so many people using that as an excuse to be overly rough on kids. And Tyler Perry stated that someone told his father what he said about him being abusive to him. And his father had the nerve to say, well, if I had maybe beat him one more time, he might have been the president. And
wow.
I didn't find anything funny about that, you know. And I see some people that are really harsh in their discipline of children. And I believe I'm being stern, but it just doesn't, to me, it makes no sense to be cruel and mean to
right.
someone. However, I do know that there are some parents and foster parents who are hard, but their intention is right. You know, their heart is in the right place. Their methods and their, you know, tools are off. Would you say that would somewhat describe him? Do you think his heart was in the right place?
Yeah. I mean, hard but fair. You know, there's a method to the madness. And
okay.
To an extent, there was.
Okay.
You know, and more of our bonding came as a result of the actions of his wife, because she just had it out for the foster kids. And so we kind of ended up with him kind of as a safe haven.
Well, you said
know.
She had it out. What do you mean?
I mean, it was just that lady is just a little bit short of the mother from Antoine Fisher. Not in the physical sense.
Okay.
But not in the physical sense, but in the mental abusive sense. And, you know, punishments are a lot. Very, 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 very much extreme for foster children. And things are just intense and just try to break you down mentally and basically set you up for failure, you know. And I say this with absolutely no bias. Like, she definitely tried to break me. But oh, it just, you get to the point where it's like, what else can you do to me?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of becomes a competition. This, I'm not saying that every person's like this, but, you know, if you can find it in yourself, or you can take yourself to that place where you basically, you have to understand that this is your life, and people are going to try to tear you down. So, you know, what else can you do to me? There's nothing else that she could do to me. Period. And, you know, after a certain point, you know, when their relationship became toxic, and, you know, he began to treat me like she did. You know, for him, it was the same thing. What else can you do to me? You can't do anything else to me. I'm going to serve my time, and I'm going to turn 18, and I'm going to get out. And, you know, thank God, you know, he the last time he hit me, I called, you know, my county worker in San Francisco, and I got moved back to the home where I initially was when I first came to Vallejo. So that was, like, the best day of my life. I was basically rescued because he hit me. So it was all good.
Boy. That's something. And just to hear the dynamics, and the reason that I do this program, the television program, and the reason I'm finishing up my workbook is because I really want to get into the minds and the hearts of the people who are so mean and abusive. And some, it's like you know that they have to know better. Others, it's like they don't know any different. And I realized a lot of them are wounded too. And that's why I said, you know, the workbook is entitled How is Your Heart Working in the Village? To help people to understand what are the issues in your life, what are you holding in your heart that allows you to have the perceptions that you do that allow you to act the way you do, because somebody's got to do something, because it's if that was what, you know, he could come up with and think that he was helping, and then he's in the madness, you know, of the spouse that he chose, that's a whole another story. But I'll stop right there. I might have to edit this.
I won't paint him as a bad person or anything like that. You know, it was one of those situations, you know, where, you know, you kind of get enraged. I think he was drinking, you know what I mean? But you kind of get enraged, you know, you like, you know, you're the man in the situation. And it's kind of like, you know, you're the kid. I'm not justifying anything, but I won't sit here and say that he's a bad man.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. If he was doing things good, but he was still able to do that. But see, as a therapist, this is the therapist part. See, I got the mama part, I got the therapist part, I got the social worker part, and I have the kid part. So the therapist in me says he was dealing with his own pain. If he had to prove himself as being the man with you, it's because he probably felt he wasn't proving himself as the man with her. But that's another topic. So, but thank you. Dion, so you did say there were foster dads, but they were not really, they had no presence. They might have been physically there, but they were like, you know, as they say, a ship passing in the night. So they were just in and out.
If I may chime in on the father's sternness, if I can real quick. I know we're running short of time, but I think this needs to be at least thought about. There is a necessary discipline that a father needs to have that sometimes a female will not be able to impart on a young teenager. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that sense of respect that they respond to, and I come from that from my own raising, from the foster parent, and also from fear of my older brother that derails my maladaptive behaviors. Now, as wild as my mother was, the screwdriver she was slamming every day had her twisted, right? And she was doing some wild things, throwing knives at people. But in all that, now I've seen her stab one of my siblings in the arm. However, that still did not bring enough fear in me, seeing her do those things, and my brother said, I'm coming out there, young blood, you better be doing this. That made me react. Little bitty Herman, the little dude, took enough fear in me to react and to stay on the right path. It wasn't my mother's wild action. As many times she would threaten me and all the things I've seen her do, she did time for doing physical stuff to people. But I didn't fear her. I feared my brother, and didn't want to disappoint him. And I don't want to, like Kevin said, look at him eye to eye and have to respond to this man in my face. That made me react. And
but you know what
critical.
I think it's more of? You know, we talk about fear, and I remember one of the therapists saying that my son shouldn't be with me because he was afraid of me. And I told him there's a such thing as a healthy fear. It's called reverence and respect.
Absolutely.
And it sounded like it really wasn't a matter of fear. You respected your brother, and the fear was of losing his presence because you respected him. You didn't have any respect for her, so you weren't afraid of her because basically you had nothing to lose.
Oh, yeah, and that's true, very true. But also I told him he could punch me in the stomach. There was a little bit of fear because I've seen him punch my brother in the stomach. I didn't want one of those. But you're right, there was a little bit of both of that. It was that presence, that omniscience of that father, that manhood, that male-to-male, that testosterone, that's something that you react to that. A male will react to that. And there is a both to that. But I really respected the fact that even with my own son, it's a healthy spirit. I want you to respect me out of, number one, my position as your father, but also, ultimately, you need to respect that out of your position and stay in your lane. And so I think there's a little both of that. Thank you for that.
Right. And it's about setting the boundaries because boundaries create a sense of security and safety. And what people, really don't get is that kids, when they are afraid and angry, they act out everything. When they can have some sense of what, how far you can go, what not to go, there might be, typical. We all have attitudes when we don't get our way, but there's a sense of security in that. So that, takes me to the parenting part. So let's go to the parenting. How did not having your dad influence or impact your choice to be a dad or not be a dad? And I know that you have children.
Okay. Well, my number one, it made me a more nurturing parent right away, and I know I did not want to be even a part-time father. It really made me want to own into that role and give these young my children. I have four. One's an adult now. All of the nurturing things that I didn't have. And take ownership of that. And I realized that once they were born, it wasn't about me anymore. It was about them and cultivating anything that they needed so they can develop into productive young people. And so right off the bat, and having a substance abuse parent, I reacted differently to that. My sisters kind of gravitated toward doing some of the same things that my mother was doing. And me coming up in the same environment, my brothers, we went the opposite direction. So I was fearful of alcohol and for years. And to this day, I don't take a drink because I'm not that kind of made me more responsible. I know there's some things called moderation. So that kind of affected me to make me a responsible as far as my social habits, and I didn't want my children to be affected by my social habits. So the way I was raised helped me in a way. As a nurturing parent, a nurturing father, and also a responsible person in terms of social and habits and all those things.
Wow. So did you ever question if you wanted to be a dad or not?
Not at all. Not at all. I knew right away because I wanted to grow a family because, having all the drama in my family, I wanted to make sure that I wanted to raise a family with peace and expand and on that. So it wasn't a doubt. And there was a time when there was a situation where, and this happens often, my oldest son is with is not with my wife now. I had a previous engagement with my oldest son. And there was a time where there was a separation period, and this happens with the breaking of the family. And I made it a point to myself that when that child ran out when I was a young man and we separated, and I saw tears in his eyes asking, when is daddy coming? And he's crying because we were moving in separate places. That was it for me. I mean, I would never generate any pain in a child like that again. That's not going to happen. And to this day, I told him I would move right next door to you if I have to. And I almost did. Almost bought a house right next door. And my wife said, that's a little bit too close. Just so I can be close to that child. I didn't want to be weekend dad or whatever. So I held true to that, and I think we're doing pretty good so far.
Oh, cool. So that's your oldest son.
Yes, I have a 21-year-old, a 17-year-old, a 13-year-old daughter, and we started all over, and I got a 6-year-old. So I'm all over the map there.
Precious, and I met the younger two, and they are adorable. And it's so funny because you have such a youthfulness to you. I didn't know you were as old as you are, so I was shocked to find that not partaking of the spirits and using your humor and your faith in God, I'm sure have really preserved your life. I just love your energy.
I'm proud of being a 40-year-old. People tease her about it, but that's a blessing. I'm proud of being. I was glad to get out of the 20s because many of us don't survive the 20s, especially young black men in these areas. So I was glad to be in the 30s. I'm proud to be over 40 right now.
All right, congratulations, Mr. Brown. How did your dad being in your life affect or impact your thoughts about being a father?
when that day comes in the very distant future. I definitely want to be right there. And mm-hmm. to be totally honest with you, I would probably be, I'd be ecstatic to see a young man or a child that looks just like me, if I'm so blessed, so lucky. But a boy, I probably wouldn't even know how to compose myself.
Wow. Mm-hmm. But that would give you, do you feel like that would give you the opportunity to be to him what you didn't have?
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, you said it's in the distant future, so just don't let it be too distant because I want to be around so I can spoil him. I should have put up that picture of you when you were, 6 years old with the baseball? I'm going to post it on our website. It's just adorable. And I've watched you interact with children, and you're really good with children as well. So I know that will be a blessing. And I know that as a female, having had some difficulties in my relationship with my mother, people ask, why did I do boys? And my thing was, I did not want to relive the relationship, the dynamics in a mother-daughter relationship as I did with my mother. So that things like that can carry you forward, too, with the presence or not presence. And I think what I'm going to do is do a program on the issue of daughters and fathers, because one of the questions I was going to ask you, do you think the impact of a father not being present is the same between boys and girls?
Can you say that again?
Do you think the impact of a father's absence is different for a boy than it is for a girl?
It depends on the type of father. I actually did a paper on this in college. When girls are young and they, even if they have a stepfather there, they actually mature sexually faster because it's like something in them that recognizes that male, like they don't share the same DNA or something like that. So mm-hmm. it depends on the presence of the man and, you know, what type of father he is. Him just being there, no matter whether it's a boy or a girl, just being there, physical body doesn't necessarily have an impact at all. But an active person and, you know, who cares about a child has more of an impact and, you know, has more of a say-so on what the child will come. I believe. I'm not a parent, so.
Yeah. I think I've actually chimed in on this before. I wrote a column about this, similar to this, about why do young women gravitate toward these gangster images and things. And I touched on how it can be equally as damaging. The absence of the father can be the pillar of strength, or it can also be the pill that damages the entire community on both sides, because they'll go down mm-hmm. the same wrong road. So without that father, and that male figure to balance out what manhood is, how you treat and respect a woman, what the image of a community person should be, that female will come up with the wrong images of what she perceives that she needs, what may not be healthy for her. And that's why they will be she'll be more vulnerable, could be, I should say, more vulnerable to some of those negative images that are out there. Because that wasn't that balance there, saying, no, you don't have, this is not manhood, this aggressive, this so-called gangster mm-hmm. swag mm-hmm. or this illegal hustling. That may be attractive to this generation, but that's not what my father did. That's not what real manhood is. Without that balance, she could fall down that road and have someone thinking that, hey, you hustle for yourself and you sell your, use what you got to get what you want. That might be more vulnerable to her, and it could be just as dangerous in a different way.
Mhm. Exactly. So I think we are going to do a whole program on that. And maybe we should do a special one next week in between. I'm going to start to wrap this up. Maybe we'll give us about 8 more minutes. And we have like 7 people on the calls and 3 have their hands up. So let me go to the people who have actually probably been here for a while. We have someone calling from the 216 area code. Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Hi. This is Ms. Evelyn. Who's calling?
This is Cedric Riley from Cleveland.
Hi, Cedric. Thank you for joining us.
Hello. I have a comment, and I will try to be brief. I was actually just reading through statuses on Facebook, and the gentleman, Kevin Brown, I'm not even sure if we are friends on Facebook, posted listen in on the call. And the instant I read the headline of young men who grew up with no father claiming a name, a legacy, and an inheritance for themselves, I was very inclined to just listen in on this conversation. And I just want to say to everyone who's listening now that I myself went through foster care over the course of 8.5 years. I was adopted at 15 and a half and never knew my father either. But what I learned over the course of feeling left, so to speak, was that my identity existed in me or else I would not have been born. And even though I didn't know my father, and I still have not made any connection with my father, and even though my mother passed away when I was only 11 years old, I realized that I was neither only my mom nor only my dad. I'm actually both of them. And so while they are absent from my life, I'm the one who was the answer to them coming together. And so the things that I sense, the things that I realize are the essence of what I should execute and what I should find out and what I should delve into and be genuine about in order to become the man that I am destined to become. And
come on now.
From being left, I went on a very voracious tangent of writing. This has been my love with what it means to be right in lieu of having no father. And my discovery has been that writing down your heart and the things that your senses tell you is the way of navigating your own path to your destiny, which is kind of like heaven on earth.
Right on, brother.
Loved it. You're definitely someone I want to follow up with and talk to, and I think you have a message to share here. Well, you just shared a message, but I'm sure that there's a whole lot more. If you go to our Facebook, subscribe on our Facebook, which is For a Child's Heart, Inc., and we'll communicate there. And you can also send me an email at ms.e@foracildsheart.org. Are you in the chat room?
No, I'm not. I'm only on the phone.
Okay. Go to For a Child's Heart, and then we'll connect there. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you so much. You all inspire me, and I'm glad to have listened in on the call.
I'm so glad you're here.
Good.
Thank you for waiting, because you've been waiting for quite some time, and I appreciate your patience.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we have someone calling from the 786 area code. You've been waiting for a while as well. Hi, who am I speaking to?
Suave.
Hey, Mr. Suave Walker, how are you?
I'm all right. Just
good. I mentioned you earlier. Did you hear me?
Yeah, I mentioned.
Okay,
do
you have any comments on this discussion?
No, I mean, this is probably other calls. I just want to commend the young men. They got my stamp of approval because, you know, I'm very critical and clearly distinguishing adult males to men, and that's one of the characteristics that I think society as a whole haven't yet caught on to, clearly making a clear distinction between an adult male and a man. And I just got to give Kevin and Dion their kudos. They're doing good, and they're identifying with that presence of being a man and how to persevere through the hardships of this world. And I do want to tell y'all I love y'all. And what I'm going to do is let other people talk, because other people may have something to say later, but I want to tell you I'm proud of you guys, because, I mean, I was blessed to have 5 generations of men. And I, even after I experienced a divorce, I'm raising my son. So I have completely identified with every part of having a father, grandfather, great-grandfather, and being a single father myself. So it's still a struggle. So, but the fact that you guys are doing it, you know, I just want to tell you're doing what you need to do to separate yourself from the many adult males in this world. And I want to tell you I love you.
Thank you, brother. I love you too.
Thank you, brother. Right. And post on our Facebook page your information. He is, his name is Suave, the real Suave, and he is Suave, S-U-A-V-E, Walker. And he's on Facebook, and you can also get information about his book entitled Lust Child. And I think we're going to have him as a guest on the program, even though it's not geared directly specifically to foster care issues. There are issues that are universal. And we hope that you guys will call back in to comment on that topic as well. So thanks for calling in.
Yeah, but it's Suave R. Walker. That R is very significant. So.
Hey, all right, and we'll find out about that. So Suave R. Walker. Okay.
Right.
Thank you, sir. Love you. Bye-bye. Okay, and someone from the 510 area code, are you there?
Yes. Hello?
Yes, and who are we speaking to?
This is Kiana Brown, Kevin Brown's older sister.
Hi.
Hello. How are you guys?
I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm fine.
Good.
I'm fine.
Do you have any comments about what your brother and the other brother had to say tonight?
I think that they are super positive. I believe that my brother has came a long, long way, and I'm so super proud of him because it's a lot of us that grew up the way we did that just fell into the statistics, you know, and never succeeded or even tried to because they felt like they had no one. But my brother was fortunate to have people come into his life and step in, you know, to where he doesn't want to do anything but succeed, and he's not settling. So I just want to tell him that I'm super proud of him, and I'm going to always be here, and for him to keep on going, you know, until he reaches what he wants to do in life. So I'm just proud of him, and I'm glad that he's out there sharing his story. I'm 31.
Wow. Thank you so much. You know, and I think I met you briefly at the graduation, but we were also out there and excited. I never really got to talk to you, but I'm having one of those heart moments, too, trying to keep the tears back because to have that support is just too, it's awesome.
Yes.
Were you expecting her, Kevin?
I'm sorry?
I was asking Kevin, did he expect that you were going to be on?
Nah, that just made my night. I'm tweeting about that right now.
I love my brother so much. We still are.
Okay.
And hopefully somebody gets touched by his story. You know, a lot of young people, and they do the same thing that he does. That's why I'm so proud of him, to show other young people that grow up the way we did that you can be somebody. It doesn't matter what nobody say about you. It doesn't matter if you had nobody. As long as you got God in your life and you had that strive to succeed, you can do it.
Yeah.
And that's my brother's message, and I'm so super proud.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I could just see him now. Well, next we're going to have to start doing this on Skype so we can see faces.
I don't want to hold you guys too long.
Pardon me?
I said I don't want to hold you guys too long. I know other people want to talk.
Well, that's okay. This is my show.
Okay.
But would you be willing at some point to be able to share your perspective of being an older sibling?
Yes.
Okay.
No problem.
I got your number now, so I'll give you a call. And if you're on Facebook, you join us up too. And it'd be nice to hear the other side of the story too. So thank you so much. And so glad you came in. You want to say bye-bye to Lil' Bo?
Okay. Bye, brother. I love you. I'll see you later. And bye, everybody else. Have a good day.
You too. Oh, that was so special.
Nice surprise.
I know. I love it. And I think our last person hung up because they probably didn't want me to call them. And so we are actually now almost 5 minutes past the time I was planning to hang up. But are there any closing remarks? Let me go back to the while you're thinking of what your closing remarks are and give people your contact information on how to contact you. And we will,
Okay.
I'm going to look at chat room. And for those who want to stay in the chat room for a little bit after we end the call, do so, because I'm just having a hard time multitasking. I've really not been responding there. So give them your websites, your blog sites, whatever else you would like them to have them about you and where you're going to be speaking or performing and all of that.
Well, let me share this with you. First of all, thank you again, Miss E, for sharing this information. I'd like to say to all those parents out there, since we're talking about dads, I'd like to share it's in my opinion, one of the most important, if not the most important roles there is. The greatest gift to the world was first from a father giving his son. So taking that lead, we got to know that cultivating the human spirit, which is the greatest resource in the world, must be one of the most endearing roles there is. So the scripture proverb I can share, whether a son is wise, whether the father is disciplined, is Proverbs 13:1. And just continue that investment that you're making. Is one that the world will forever benefit from when you're raising your child. So keep that in mind. Enjoy every aspect of fatherhood, from being burped on to having to chase your kids around, all that, enjoy it. And I assure you in the brotherhood of fatherhood, if I can, and just enjoy every aspect of it. As far as Deion Price, I'd like to appreciate those who log into the website and receive the column, This Generation, that runs online and in the Daily Republic. In the near future, in the fall of 2011, there'll be a book telling the story of the hardship and humor of foster care and growing up in the epidemic of the crack epidemic with alcoholic parents and all the drama associated with it, called Raised in Hell, and that'll be released in the fall of 2011. Look forward to seeing your input on that. I have a website of www.priceedutainment.webs.com where you can get the contact with me. I'm also on Facebook, and I'll have all that information on my Facebook page as well, and with all that information. So for all your listeners, thank you, and I appreciate being invited to see, and I enjoyed talking to you, Brother Kevin. I wish you well, and I'm proud of you as well.
And we're going to sponsor, Four Child's Heart is going to sponsor a book signing for you, okay?
I appreciate that.
Yeah, we've got to do that. We've got to do that. So give me that, because I think I wrote your website wrong. I forgot the Price Edutainment Web, WEB.com?
Yes, it's dot web, WEBS.com.
Okay, I got it. All right. Thank you. Don't hang up yet, though.
Okay.
Jeff.
Yes, thank you, everybody, for listening on the call. Thank you, Miss E, Godmom E, Heart Lady. Dion, you know, it was a pleasure to hear your story, man, and to talk with you, man. A pleasure to meet you. I'm pretty sure we'll still be in contact. If anyone wants to get in contact with me, you can reach me on my blog at kevbrown1.com. And you can also find me on Facebook at kevbrown001. And that's my fan page. So, you know, like me, I've been doing public speaking here in New York City with the New York City Public Schools. And I'm also available for booking for keynote speeches and workshops on success and leadership and financing your college education for free.
Right on.
And repeat your Facebook page again.
Facebook.com/ Kev Brown, KEVBROWN001.
Okay. You know, I can't keep up with all of these. And I have to tell everybody, the fact that I'm sitting here on this call talking to you and having met all the little rascals and everyone, you owe that to Kev, because he kept saying, Godmom, you need to get on Facebook. I said, I don't have time to Facebook. He said, all you got to do is do this. And that's been like 2.5 years ago, and I think I'm on it now more than he is. So he knows, and you know, that I'm very proud of you. He always tells everybody he knows that he's my favorite. So I tell him that as long as he keeps in touch, but he knows he's my heart, love him dearly, and I'm just so proud of you. And Dion, we're all family now, so everybody also. Pardon me?
Yeah, right on, I agree.
All right. So thank you for those who listen to the whole thing. I almost used up even my extra time. This is like having a little extra money in the bank, huh? So tune in. Go to our Facebook page, please, and leave your comments about this program so we can continue to increase the listenership. But just let people know what you got. I'm going to copy the comments here on the chat room and email them to Kevin and Dion if you're not in the chat room, so that you can at least see what the comments were and if you wanted to respond to any of them. So thank you so much. Everybody have a blessed evening.
Yeah, Thompson just said that she's your favorite. Lies and Fairy Tales.
Say that again.
On the chat with Nikki Thompson, I'm your favorite. Hey, I'm your favorite.
Oh, you're looking at the chat room.
Hey.
I think Nikki is working on being my favorite girl. And we've never even really, I heard her voice for the first time last week, but she writes and she's a sweetheart. She's a sweetheart. And like, yeah. And one day I'll just share with you. Oh, we're going to do a special program. And for the whole hour, it's going to be the Little Rascals. And we're going to talk about just the relationships that are developing there. And it just means a lot. And even as for me, as being the adult ally, how important this is to me as well. So I love you guys, and I thank you. And I know that we have lurking in the background is my adopted brother and one of our board members, a facilitator who's going to help with the village, who's already helping with the village, Dan Smith. So you haven't said a peep all night, but I know you're there. But everybody have a good one. God bless, and we'll see you maybe even next week, but for sure in 2 weeks. Night-night.
Night-night.
Night-night. Good night.
If it knows no color, I have no eye to see. Rachel's